February 23rd, 2016. You are looking live at Charleston, South Carolina. This is episode 547 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. We are back for Footer and Leach. Footer and Leach have returned. We are going to be doing weekly podcasts again, so weekly baseball podcasts with my friend and yours, Allison Footer, national correspondent for MLB.com. We are starting with a preview of the NL East this week. I am currently in South Carolina covering the Democratic primary, that's what they call it, for Bloomberg Politics, my little side fun gig that I have here. I felt the burn yesterday. If you don't stop scratching the burn, it will never heal. But we are ready for baseball. There are actual spring training games on Saturday. It's amazing. It's actually happening. It's happening. So we are going to talk about the NL East and baseball stuff with Allison Footer, who is back for our weekly podcast. You've missed her. You shan't miss her again. Hello, Allison. You are about to do something that makes me envious. I'm in South Carolina right now, so it's very nice. It's very lovely. It's very warm. It's very happy. But you're about to go to spring training. To me, spring training, because I don't go every year, is this really exciting thing that I feel really bad that I'm not at. Do you still feel that way, or does it start to feel like a slog after you've been doing it for a while? You could be honest.
You know, that's a tough question to answer because, what I do now is so different from what I did for, 15 right. years in a row. And it largely depends on where you are, I think. I mean, when you first get to spring training, you're really happy to see everyone. You have a lot of things that you want to get done. You have a lot of things just going on in your mind as far as stories you want to write and people you want to meet. That kind of wears off for everybody a couple weeks in. I was in Kissimmee, Florida for 15 years in a row. And so I would have to say that was my least favorite time of the year. Not that I wasn't eternally grateful by the people I was employed by and doing what I was doing. But it became, when you're in the middle of Disney World, during spring break time, there's really nothing fun. But that being said, there's nowhere I'd rather be. During spring training, I don't want to not be at spring training. I mean, that's where the baseball is. And I always want people to send me toward the baseball. And so I'm going toward the baseball starting tomorrow.
Which is exactly why I'm envious. I'm certainly not envious of the Florida part. I'm envious of the baseball part.
Yes.
I'm curious now, because obviously we work in baseball year round. Are you working yourself back in? Do you feel like you're getting yourself back in the baseball shape when you get there and get back in the rhythm? Or do you feel behind? Do you work yourself back into kind of baseball shape a little bit, or are you already ready?
Well, I'm in the best shape of my life. Let's get
that out of the way. Of course,
yes, I'm working on a changeup, and yes.
It's a different grip. It's a different grip. It's key. Last year, people said you were tipping pitches.
I definitely was. A poor performance would never be blamed on my actual level of ability, so I'll blame it on something else. But I am working on the changeup and a little two-seamer. other than that, yes, because to be honest, there's so much preparation that goes into what I am about to do for the next 5 days. And I also do these other podcasts with two divisions with the NL West and the NL East. And so I'm constantly reading, and I'm making notes and I'm doing all this stuff. And so it's nice when you finally get there and you're sort of implementing the things that you're just I feel like I'm cramming for finals right now. And so when you get around the actual teams, the players, the people, the managers and the baseball, then you sort of can relax a little bit. So right now I'm actually a little bit tense because there's a lot I have to remember to do.
Well, it always makes me sad when you talk about the other podcasts. I know they're there. I just try to pretend that they're not. Listen, I have three other podcasts myself, so I don't get to say anything. But people listen to yours. So you're there, and you're going to be – so where exactly are you going?
Well, so tomorrow I'm flying to Orlando because, God forbid, I would not fly to Orlando once in my life. So I'm flying into Orlando, and I am we have photo days. So are you familiar with photo days are?
Yeah, it's all I know is that it's the day where all of a sudden you get a bunch of wacky pictures showing up from people.
Yeah, so basically, if you need a headshot of any baseball players for any reason, you go to photo day. So it's the local newspaper, it's MLB.com, it's the baseball card companies, assuming that they still exist. The scoreboard operators for each team, anybody who needs a headshot, and they just line up in a room and along maybe a balcony And the players hold play like name cards up, and they get their pictures taken, and they go from station to station to station. And we are also there doing a lot of video interviews and preview questions, and tell us about what you think about the rotation. And we pick a handful of guys from each team, plus the manager, plus the top prospect. So tomorrow, Wednesday, I have Astros photo day. Thursday, I've got Pirates. Saturday, I've got Yankees. And Sunday, I've got Orioles. So by the end of that stretch, I'll be able to tell you anything you need to know about any of those teams.
Yeah. And, you know, it always amazes me when you see a bad scoreboard photo of someone. Like,
yeah.
It's because, I mean, it's a digital age. You could take dozens of photos. And it's always amazing to me to think that as someone at some point, if I had to look at myself every single time I came up the plate and I had to look at that dopey photo of myself, I feel like I'd say something.
Okay, but see, here's the thing. Okay, this is really funny. I have two things to say about that. One, like every time, for all of you listeners out there, every time that you see one of those dopey photos on the scoreboard, just remember this was taken at 7 a.m. on February 26th. In Florida, Arizona, when guys are barely awake. And it was really funny because the Astros got a brand new scoreboard about 5 years ago or so, 4 or 5 years ago, and it was going to be HD, and that was for the first time. And so the PR department put up a sign on the bulletin board at spring training that said, please shave and comb your hair for photo to remember the new board is HD.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, there's nothing you can really do about it. It's really hard to be photogenic at that early stage in the morning when it's really dorky and you're sort of just like holding up this little name card and you're trying to smile and it's really like everyone's watching and it's just really uncomfortable. So yeah, some of the photos, like even the most handsome guys, I'm like, ooh, some of them are just not, they're just not going to be. It's just not made for that.
I feel like there was a Tumblr a few years ago of awkward player headshots. You're right. Like just regular looking guys, they just look so strange.
And well, there was a coach for the Astros. I will he will remain unnamed, but you know, a little different looking. And there was a picture that was taken of him. He was caught like before he was smiling or whatever, and he's looking at, like a deer in the headlights. And it's just the funniest picture. Anyway, it became a t-shirt that everybody in the clubhouse was wearing.
I'm so glad. And listen, you know, I mean, I have my picture next to my pieces. I'm not looking so hot myself, but certainly, though I do have less offensive facial hair.
You're a very handsome guy, Will. Actually, you take very good pictures. I can say that objectively because we're buddies.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, stop. Okay, I'd like to cancel the rest of the podcast. Let's unpack this a little. No, let's not. but no, I do feel it's just funny that like it is impossible not to be a little awkward in that situation. And baseball players too, the thing that we always forget about baseball players is they, like, you know, they have, they're so scheduled, they're just like, here, go here.
Yes.
And they don't know, and they so, you know, the idea that they would prepare themselves for this, they're just, go here now, okay,
right.
Look at this thing, and then next thing you know, you're blank, I'm a little hungover, staring. And actually, do athletes even drink anymore? Like, I guess
some.
Yeah, but I guess I'm a little. I just finished my 6-hour workout at 7 in the morning, and here stare into this camera. And next thing you know, that's the face on the board every stadium you go to, and every time you bat from then on.
The caps that they wear are like the regular season caps, but that's not. So they have to like go into the equipment manager's office, and they have to find their hat size. It's not even like just the cap that they've been wearing. So they have to it's just this whole like scheduled routine thing. This is why Bruce Bochy's, head size comes up every year at Astros camp. You know, he was a catcher in the organization like 40 years ago, but invariably someone will bring up the fact that his head is so enormous that on photo day they had to make sure that his hat size was there to get one specially made.
So this looks like it's funny. This is one of those things that I'm hearing you talk about this. This sounds pretty interesting. This sounds like a fun thing. But I imagine by the second day, and even halfway through the first day, you've maybe had enough.
Had enough of spring training?
I had enough of photo business.
Oh, well, yeah. Photo day is just one day. I mean, that's the thing. It's
okay.
One.
I thought you had to do one for like the Yankees and one for the Orioles. And
Okay. Yes.
I'm talking about you specifically. Yes. Yes.
Yes. I, you know, to be honest with you, though, because there are so many things that we have to do on photo day for what our multimedia purposes are, that my mind is racing and racing.
Right, right.
So when it's over, it's not that I get tired of it. It's I worry the entire time that I'm going to forget something. And so I just – I overstress, and then when it's over, I feel like I can relax and smile and laugh a little bit. I mean, it's very enjoyable, and it's fun to, you know, ask the questions, and you're interacting with so many different players from so many teams. I just, there are a million things that we have to remember to do, and I just don't want to forget anything.
Well, it's good to know that this is how our HD scoreboard sausage is made.
Yes.
I suppose it explains a lot. It is something I'm sure every fan has wondered, wait, that's the best shot they had? And now we know why.
Think about it. The best shot they had. The photo day has to be finished by 9 o'clock when they hit the field for stretch. That's when it has to be over. And you have 60 plus, you have 60 plus players plus the coaching staffs of anyone who's in major league camp. So there are so many people to shuttle through there. And so it starts like Astros photo day is starting at 6:30 a.m. and we had to be set up by 6:00. And so that means we had to get there at 5:30. So I'm actually getting up at 4 a.m. every day until this thing is over.
I'm trying to imagine what Colby Rasmus was like at 6 o'clock in the morning, trying to pose for a photo.
Yeah. And like his headshot is like, I mean, you know, he's not, the Astros had a gala, a few weeks ago, like at the ballpark, and he was like in a tux, and you know, he looked really very nice. He looked like a crazy person in his headshot.
He looked like a dirt bag is what he looked
like. Hair still wet. You know, he probably just taken a shower and they just throw the cap on. And it's a good thing that they're like, you know, they're guys. And so who really, they don't really care what they look like.
Yeah. They're guys and they're in their 20s and they're just right. Like, whatever. I'm immortal. So it doesn't matter because I'm a baseball player in my 20s. All right. So, well, good. Well, have a great time. I'm envious that you will be there. As I said, I'm not making spring training this year. I'm running around. I'm currently, I just came back. I've been doing, I did the Iowa Republican candidates. Now I am in South Carolina. It's in the Democratic candidates. I felt the burn.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, I felt the burn.
I mean, this is hilarious that you're like covering the campaigns.
I know. I'm impersonating an adult. It's kind of fun.
Love it.
But as I said, as I keep telling people, you know, covering politics makes me realize how comparatively sane, normal, and comforting covering sports is.
Yes.
Though, and it has the advantage of at the end they play a game, and that's like the best part. There's like a game at the end of the day, as opposed to here, where at the end everybody just yells at each other some more.
I mean, to be honest with you, though, like not to get off on this tangent, but the whole thing going on with Pablo Sandoval. With the sports writers like just totally bagging on him for his weight. I was like, well, this is kind of like the politicians screaming at each other and everyone's making fools of themselves.
Honestly,
so.
Particularly not only sports writers making fun of a fat baseball player, fun of a fat baseball player during spring training. Like never mind that Sandoval may or may not work his way back into shape. But if you have ever, like, sports writers look bad anyway. During spring training, like, they look like they have just crawled out of bed and just grabbed whatever four things were closest to them to put on, whether they were clothes or not.
It's I could go on for days on so, but I will see some. But I did in my early years in the Astrodome when there were so many like cookies and so many good things that were available in the media dining room, and I would just be tempted to like get up in the middle of the game and like just go and grab an extra couple cookies, and I would just look down the rows in the press box and see what I was seeing and say, nope, okay, I think I need to pace myself a little bit if I'm going to make it in this business.
Yeah,
that's all I'll say about that.
Unbelievable. So yes, poor Pablo Sandoval. So okay, so we're gonna do a thing where we are back on full season schedule now. We are back. We're weekly. If you've missed us, you are getting a weekly baseball podcast. Again, we're back. I'm still be doing some other shows during the week that are not baseball related, or maybe not necessarily Allison Futter related. But we are back on the weekly baseball podcast with Futter and Leach. So we're gonna kick it off with we're gonna do a preview of every division. Each week, because it's 6 weeks away. It's like happening like really soon. Like, she's going to spring training for crying out loud. So it is happening. So we're going to start with the NL East, the National League East, the East. And one of the nice thing about the NL East, and we're going to do predictions, and we're going to look at each team. And I'll start us off to kind of kick us going. One of the funny things about the AL East is I did a piece last week looking at every team in baseball and how many teams legitimately can actually say we're not trying to win the championship this year. And it's a little different than the NBA in that, like, there's like four teams that are trying to win a championship in the NBA because there's only so much level. But if in baseball, if you can make the playoffs, you can win the championship. It's the way baseball's set up. So if you feel like you have even the slightest chance to win the championship, you can therefore say make the playoffs, you can therefore say you're going for a championship. So I found five teams, only five, that have, I think, no chance of winning going to the playoffs this year. two of them are in this division. All five are in this league. The National League is completely strange this year. So let's start off with the biggest question of the NL East, which is who is worse, Philadelphia or Atlanta? I will go first. I think Philadelphia is better. I think Atlanta is actually worse because Philadelphia started this. Atlanta still has a couple, like they have Freddie Freeman, so they have the best player than either team. But other than that, that offense is it's actually sad when you look at some of the older players that are still hanging around. Like Nick Swisher is still hanging around there.
I was shocked to see that. I was like, who?
Yeah. He is still hanging around. To me, the Braves, you know, I'm picking the Braves fifth. They are like the Phillies have some young talent and they're working their way through and they're starting to cycle through a little bit where the Braves, while they also have a lot of young talent, I think more young talent than Philadelphia, it's a few more years away. So I think the Braves and Phillies actually are well on their way to maybe be competitive in the next 2 or 3 years. But man, this year is going to be rough, particularly when it comes to Atlanta, because this is also the last season in their stadium. And of course, we discussed the stadium before, but not only is their last season in their stadium, but it's their last season in the city. And they're about to leave and go out to a suburb, and everybody in Atlanta is angry about it, and everyone thinks they're just being so shady and terrible about it. And last year already, the Braves were treating Turner Field like it was this lame duck, dumb place that they wanted to get out of. This year, the Cardinals play the Braves in the first weekend of the season. And I don't know if I'm going to go back to Turner Field the rest of the year. It's going to be and I live an hour away. It's going to be really bad, and it's going to be really depressing.
Wow, I'm so sad now.
Yeah, sorry. Well, we'll get to the more happy team soon. But to me, that is the thing is, you know, you want when a team leaves a stadium or moves, you'd like their last year to be a celebration. And not only are the Braves going to be bad, but they just are. They're going to have like a few cursory celebrations of Turner Field this year, but they were only there for 20 years. So it's not like there's a ton of history there. So it really is just kind of this ugly, let's just get through the string of this year until it gets better.
That was a pretty good 20 years though, Will.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know.
Yeah. I mean, okay. Well, I was going to say that I thought the Braves might be a little bit better than the Phillies, but you do make some compelling arguments. Maybe I feel like the Braves are in better position in a couple of years.
Yeah, I think so.
Think that they really position themselves well, and I don't think there's going to be like this big farewell because they're really not leaving the Atlanta area so much. it's kind of an uncomfortable situation where they just demographically don't want to be where they are anymore, and so they're going to where it appeals to them more. Fine, let them do whatever they want. The attendance has not been good there anyway. I mean, it's not like people are, you know, coming out in droves in years that the team isn't good. But I do, yeah, I'm looking at their offense now, and I do see what you're saying. I just feel like the Phillies are going into camp with knowing, like, nobody knows who anybody else is. And they're really, really starting over from scratch. But that being said, we've been hearing about their minor league system for a couple of years being pretty decent. So, I mean, they could... I don't know. The big trade that they made with the Astros, so as you know, we've talked about it. I don't view Mark Appel as being a future starter. And I'm not so sure that the group now is the group that they're going to want in a couple of years, but I don't know. I guess you could toss a coin as far as who's going to have the worst year. I kind of did like the Braves for, I don't know. They got a couple interesting starting pitchers.
They do.
They could, I mean, like you said, Freddie Freeman's still there, and I don't know. I mean, one team might win 68, one team 71. Is that what we're going with here?
Yeah, and it's the strangest thing. I feel like I don't want to spend any much more time on the Phillies and Braves. But one thing that I do find kind of amazing is the Phillies clearly had to get to this point. They were old, they were expensive. Yes. They're probably a couple years late, frankly, on actually doing this. The Braves, I still don't understand why they had to do this. I understand why they did. Once they made the initial Hayward trade, once they made the decision, we're not signing Hayward and we're not signing Upton. But remember, 2 years ago, we were looking at the Braves as this team that had all of this young talent that they had wrapped up early, and they had Hayward and Upton and Freeman and Simmons and all of these young players. And then they had like one bad stretch 2 years ago in August, and they just fired Wren, started completely over, and I don't, you know, if I'm a Braves fan, I get worried that if that new stadium is not sold out in the first couple of years and is not the big hit that they want it to be, all of these young players I'm getting excited about now, they will trade away, start over again, because they're owned by a company that is really has shown to really just kind of be about the bottom line. And that will undercut a process that the Braves were not, the Phillies were falling apart and desperately had to do something. The Braves, if they hadn't traded Hayward and Upton and all those guys last year, they could have been a playoff team last year. And I think that is that after them doing that and the way that the Braves have treated the city of Atlanta and how that ownership group has been just shady from the get-go, I don't know if I would trust. I would have a hard time trusting this sudden new rebuild, even if they do have a bunch of talent.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I see your point. I always saw it as the Braves were always just like a little bit more savvy than a lot of other teams that need to be rebuilt, in that they never let it get to the point where it's almost like an Astros situation from a few years ago or a Philly situation, where they're able to cut down a little and then build it back up enough, and that they don't have to go through, like, you know, 7 years of futility to get back. So I don't know.
We'll see. But we don't want to spend enough of those guys. I like the idea. This is how bad this division this year is, though, that there are two teams in worse shape than the Marlins, which is always kind of fun. The Marlins have some talent. They do have talent. They do have. Now, for the record, we are not going to let's say it together, Allison. We are not going to get sidetracked by a Barry Bonds conversation. We're not going to get sidetracked by a Barry Bonds conversation. He looks good, though. He does look good. He looks like he's been biking. He does. He's been biking. He looks good.
That's a very low carb diet. We'll
yeah,
just say
he's
that.
Very lithe. But the general problem with the Marlins is, frankly, I just don't trust them. I feel if they have any health problems with Hernandez or Stanton, Stanton is actually getting on enough now that I think these injuries don't feel like flukes anymore.
Yeah. And, well, some of them are not his fault.
I know, but there's a lot of them. There's a lot of different parts breaking down at once. I don't know. It does seem that last year we'd have been like, okay, but Stanton will be healthy this year. And then once again, he wasn't healthy. And I know some of them are fluke injuries, but now, you know, it's certainly – the thing with the Marlins is I can't help but wonder, and I know this probably isn't fair, but I can't help but wonder if Stanton and Hernandez were in different organizations, I feel like they would be healthy and dominating and happy. And for some reason, the Marlins, I just feel like that's how everything goes wrong.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's so many things that have to do with drama, and there's so much stuff that they have to deal with. Just from an organizational standpoint, Don Mattingly is going to have to deal with a lot of the riffraff from the front office, from the ownership group. And yeah, that's always like kind of a sticking point, because you do wonder within the clubhouse walls, like, if these guys are happy being Marlins, if they're proud being Marlins. I mean, that does kind of make a difference in a lot of ways. So I don't know that I do feel like they're going to be in the mix for contention. While they're not the best team in the division, they're definitely the most interesting, and I think we are going to be paying a lot of attention to them. But when you have a team, of course, with Stanton and Hernandez, I mean, they have to be healthy. But they don't have enough to overcome if there's any kind of stretches between either one of them where they're not. I mean, they're just not deep enough in that way. And you know, I don't know if there's going to be any discord. I mean, you always have to kind of pencil them in for some kind of stupid controversy that didn't need to happen. I'm just so fascinated why Don Mattingly wanted this job.
Yeah.
And I'll be very curious to see kind of how he navigates through that. If there's anybody's personality, if there's anybody that's perfect for this, it's probably him, because not only is he so level-headed, even-keeled, laid-back, but he's also so respected for what he's done in his career that I can't really see, like, ownership, like, screaming at him or, doing their weirdness that they have towards so many major league managers that have come through there, that maybe there will be a little bit more, I don't know, sanity among everybody.
Yeah, it's. I have to say, I'm kind of baffled that he wanted that job.
I'm shocked that he wanted that job.
And I understand there are a lot of Dodger fans would be like, he's lucky to have that job, because a lot of people didn't like some of his he's not known for his high for strategy is probably the best way to put it. So certainly I know there's some frustration with him in Los Angeles. But you know, we've talked about Molly Knight's book in the past. I think I had always kind of been kind of down on him as a manager, but that book actually made me feel a little better about him, and maybe he has more skills in that regard than we thought. Frankly, some of the Puig stuff fights that I used to mock him for, he's kind of looking like he may, if not necessarily been right on that stuff, we understand where he was coming from a little bit more on that. So it feels like the only reason you would take this job is he just really did not want to be out of managing for a year. And so he would just take any job that comes along, and that, I guess, includes the Marlins one.
Yeah, I mean, but if you look at the actual players that comprise this roster, I mean, you know, Jared Cozart is a little bit of an odd guy, and you never really quite know what's going on with him. But for the most part, I mean, the leaders of this team, and I mean, like, Dee Gordon, I mean, is one of the most delightful people you're ever going to meet. Stanton is just a great person and a great player and a great team leader. So, I mean, I think there's going to be, like, enough harmony inside the clubhouse. I think that, you know, Mattingly could thrive in this role. I just think that with what he also has to deal with the what's above him, you know, which has nothing to do with the way that the team could perform. And I think it's going to have a good, solid third place finish in the NL East.
Yeah, and there are wins on the board for them because there are two really bad teams in the division that they're going to be able to theoretically beat a lot, which I would make them more excited about them at the wild card, except the NL Central is the exact same way. But we'll get to that when we talk about the NL Central. So this comes down to the fundamental question, I think, like everybody has about this division: who's going to win? Is it going to be the Mets or the Nationals? The Nationals obviously have our old pal, Dusty Baker, back in charge. Certainly, he is set up to succeed in that everyone was so down on Matt Williams that if the natural talent of this team steps forward and does what it's supposed to do and what it should have done last year, it will look like he did it. So, which is always a nice position to be in. But the Mets, the thing with the Mets is, you know, I was expecting a step back for the Mets this year, and then they signed Cespedes, and all of a sudden, and I think sometimes Cespedes gets a little overrated. There are holes in his game. I think that 2 months that he had with the Mets when he first got there, people have think that's the player he is, and I don't think he's quite that player. But that's a much better team with him in the middle of the lineup. So here's my question: who do you think is going to win this division, the Mets or the Nationals?
The Mets.
You like the Mets?
I not particularly. I actually think the Nationals are a lot more talented, but you know, it's really, I don't know. I mean, I go either way on this, but I'm looking at like the Nationals depth chart, the way it's set up right now, and I see this like really great rotation, but I still see Jonathan Papelbon as the closer, and I see Jason Worth coming back as a starting outfielder. Older player, I don't know what that translates into. Daniel Murphy, who I think in a lot of ways his stock has been raised so much because of what he did in the first two rounds of the playoffs, and then but you have to think about what he actually is, which is like kind of a poor defender. There's a lot of questions, and a lot of times your rotation is as good as its defense behind him, and I'm not crazy about it. And I just think that when it comes to over the long haul of a season, of course, we know it wins in the playoffs, which doesn't necessarily mean, you know, four fantastic starting pitchers. It's more a fantastic bullpen, great defense, and timely hitting. But over the long haul, I just see this Mets rotation as being back a little bit more mature, a little bit stronger. And I think that they're a really good team. With Cespedes in there, I'm just picking them to win the division.
Yeah, it's great. You know, it's funny. Last year, the Mets really kind of made the playoffs because everyone else in that division collapsed, and they had one hot month. So theoretically, we shouldn't be as high on them as they would be. The way that everyone was thinking of the Royals last year, I mean, obviously the pitching's better, but theoretically, you would think that there'd be people down in the Mets. But people are much more up in the Mets. I saw Jonah Carey had them number two in his rankings. People are really high in the Mets. I like the Mets too, but I'm actually picking the Nationals. I feel like everything had to completely go wrong for them last year,
and it did.
And even then, they were still an above 500 team. They still were in the race relatively late, and you know, and really they completely fell apart at the end of the season emotionally and everything else. Say what you will about Dusty Baker, and I think the whole he ruins young pitchers thing is actually kind of a narrative that's a couple decades out of date. He doesn't really do that anymore. He kind of learned his lesson from destroying Mark Pryor, so thank you for that. But he certainly learned his lesson from that. And I think there's evidence that he did not do that in San Francisco and did not do that in Cincinnati. So, and in general, he was pretty good with young pitchers. So I actually like that rotation. I like the way it sets up. I don't like the Daniel Murphy thing. That seemed like weird and reactionary and strange. But I do feel like not all of those hitters are going to have their terrible year. And frankly, I think Harper may be just as good. I think Harper is, you know, I think Harper may have just as good a year. What we saw last year seems to set him up to not to be not for that not to be his peak in a lot of ways. And so it's very exciting to see that. So I actually say I do like the Nationals to win this division. We don't have to pick a wild card yet. We can figure that out at the end. But I think that last year people were saying the Nationals were going to win like 115 games or something. And this is albeit a little older and no Ian Desmond, who turned out to be terrible. And to me, I think you can make a good case for them to be – that rotation is still really great. The Pavlon thing is a little worrisome. But, hey, he's an asshat. He's still not a terrible pitcher. He's not actually a terrible pitcher. And, you know, if Dusty Baker can deal with Barry Bonds for that long, I feel like he can – though I like Barry Bonds a lot more than I like Jonathan Papelbon, I think that if they can figure it out, that people have been through worse situations. So I actually do like the Nationals to win the division. So you've got the Mets, and I've got the Nationals. Yes,
I would not be surprised, obviously, at all. But the only thing that would surprise me is if it didn't come down to the last weekend of the season. Yeah. I can't. I don't know. Jonathan Papelbon, there's something.
Yeah, I get it.
In some ways, like on one hand, I feel like, okay, like these problems that they had last year are not going to carry over because they cleanly swept out the manager and every single coach. So it's not like there's going to be kind of anything lingering from that. And Dusty, I think the world of him. And I do think that he can bring everybody together. I also like Bryce Harper. And I think I'm one of the few people that sort of defends him. I don't think he's a punk. I don't think he has an attitude problem. And obviously he's an amazing player, but I don't know. There's just something. Maybe I just find the Nationals' aura to be slightly dysfunctional, and sometimes I feel like it filters down, and there might be some leadership issues there. But I don't know. I still really like the Mets.
I get it. And listen, I think more players should be punks. I like punks. Baseball needs more punks. But that's me. That's just me because I was never a punk and wanted to be one so desperately. But I was too well behaved. I was too much of a well behaved Midwesterner.
I don't know. You see Bryce Harper doing a lot of positive things. And I don't know. Maybe I'm on social media too much. He just seems like he's really good to kids.
I agree.
Genial in public. And he seems to like his family. I mean, I don't know. Like, give the guy a break.
I agree. I actually would like him to be more punkish. I want Mike Trout to like take a heel turn and just go nuts. I think that would be the best thing that could happen to him. Well, I'll tell you what, it doesn't really matter because we're going to hate Harper forever because when his contract up, he's signing with the Yankees. And then that's going to be a thing. So that'll be fun.
You have to appreciate his quotes when they're like, do you think you could be a $300 million player? And he's kind of like, hey, don't put limits on me, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Something along those lines.
$400 million. I think we are $400 million podcasters here. I have no question that we are that. All right, Allison, well, have a safe trip. Have a safe trip to Florida. Have a great time. I'm envious, not necessarily of the photo day and all the multimedia stuff, but the fact that you will be in Florida and there will be baseball. And so, because I guess the games start, first spring training games will be starting by the time we do the next podcast.
Yeah, so they're like what, March 2nd, 3rd, somewhere around there?
I think the first is actually Philadelphia against some like Florida Atlantic or someone on like Saturday the 28th. So
Good time.
Or Sunday the 28th, whenever it is. By the time we come back, there will be actual box scores, which is kind of exciting. That's actual box scores.
Yeah, they'll be like, and everyone's going to play in every single game for like the first week.
Oh, yeah. And you get, I did a piece last week where I ranked spring training numbers. That was a total in a Friday, February column. Like, oh, man, I'm going to write every day. I need a column. Hey, let's just rank every spring training number. So, because I like the idea that, like, hey, someone wears 97 in spring training. Sure. So that's the fun of spring training. So have a great time down there. I'm envious, I'm sure. And we'll do this again next week. Talk about some other division. I'm not sure which.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Well, we're back. Footer and Leach are back. Yes. So everyone, please follow Allison, of course, on Twitter at Allison Footer. And, of course, read all of her work on MLB.com. And, of course, please make sure to subscribe to us in iTunes and give us a nice little review. Well, we'd appreciate it. Yeah, it'd be nice. Otherwise, we'll be back next week with the actual considering of the season is beginning. So off we go. Have a great week, everyone. We'll see you guys next week with more baseball stuff. Yay, baseball. See you.